Welcome to episode number 13 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. Hi, my name is Conrad Weaver. I'm a filmmaker and podcast host and the director of the award-winning film PTSD 911. For the past 4 years, I've been working with first responders from all across the USA to bring wellness to the forefront of our conversations. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Medina Baumgart. Dr. Baumgart is a licensed psychologist in California and a board-certified specialist in police and public safety psychology. She has extensive experience working with sworn and civilian law enforcement personnel in both correctional and agency settings. In her book, Surviving Retirement, Finding Purpose and Fulfillment Beyond the Badge, she combines real-life insights, professional expertise, and practical strategies to help retiring cops and their spouses prepare for and navigate the changes inherent in retirement from a law enforcement career. Tune in for my conversation with Dr. Medina Baumgart. Hey, I really appreciate you listening to the podcast. And if you think others would too, please subscribe and share. That helps us get the word out to others. And I want you to know that you can access this interview on our YouTube channel for absolutely free. Visit youtube.com and search PTSD 911 movie. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, please send me an email and tell me about your company or organization. If you are looking to spread the word about what you do in the first responder space, this show may be a great fit for you. I would love to talk to you about how we can help. Thanks again for listening. And now here's my interview with Dr. Medina Baumgart. Well, Medina, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. It's really great to see you and looking forward to our conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what's your connection to first responders?
Sure. So I have a very personal connection. I'm married to a police officer. We've been together for over 20 years. So I was with him for the last half of his job and then into his retirement, which that was an adventure. And then I've also been working with first responders since 2008. Mm-hmm. So I first started out my career in a correctional setting and then moved over to a law enforcement agency. Mm-hmm. So primarily I conduct counseling, critical incident debriefings, and I work with our peer support and chaplains programs. Mm-hmm.
And you are a psychologist, right? You have a doctorate in psychology.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. My doctorate's in psychology and then I'm board certified in police and public safety psychology.
Okay. Awesome. So were you interested in all that before you met your husband, or was that something that kind of came as a result of your relationship?
I actually started when my interest was on the criminal side of the house and working a lot in the correctional settings with the mental health court. It was great until it just wasn't fulfilling for me. And an opportunity came up with my law enforcement agency that I'm with now. I lateraled over there and I couldn't be happier.
Mm-hmm. What have you seen just in the conversations you've had over the past, over your career, working with these groups? What have you seen as far as the conversation related to mental health and wellness? How has that evolved?
I'll say just in the, relatively short amount of time, just over a decade that I've been working with law enforcement personnel, I would say, especially over the last 5 to 10 years, it's definitely been more openly talked about. One of the fantastic opportunities that I get is working with our, peer support program. And so a lot of those have lived experience, both in personal and professional lives. And so, they're able to openly talk about the issues impacting them. I'm able to openly share, stuff on the relationship side. So I think a lot of law enforcement professionals, and spouses, we talk about the relationship stuff. I'm seeing and hearing more on the trauma, post-traumatic stress injuries, and just overall mental health and taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I think this job, we know, taxes your physical, mental, emotional well-being, spiritual well-being, relationships. And I feel like that's getting talked about more and more.
Yeah. I know in the LA area, you guys had a tragedy a couple of weeks ago with four sheriff's deputies who took their own lives. Has that impacted your work and has that impacted the people that you work with?
Oh, immensely. Yes. I think there's a lot of, acknowledgement of the impact of the job. Situations like this, unfortunately, they're very tragic, but they also bring to light how important it is to take care of yourselves and to check in on one another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's just the accumulation of everything, all of the staffing shortages, you know, mandatory overtime and things that are impacting law enforcement officers nationwide. And this, I think, just highlights the cumulative toll of everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I know the national FOP, their research, they found that the institutional stress is probably one of the top stressors for law enforcement, especially. And I was actually talking with a retired fire chief yesterday here locally, and he was talking about an incident, you know, here with the local department and how that is absolutely true in the fire world as well. How those challenges, whether it's staffing, whether it's just poor leadership or whatever, that really impacts our first responders. You know, what have you seen and how do you deal with that in your practice? When someone comes and says, well, my supervisor is doing this, or, you know, I'm struggling with this because of mandatories, or what are you, how do you deal with those kind of situations?
I think, you know, I always start with getting a basic snapshot of, I guess we'll call it like overall stress management. Just so on a daily basis, what are you doing for yourself? And then also looking at components of the stressor, you know, are there ways to utilize your own strengths to maybe contribute to a solution? Sometimes within organizations, yeah, that's not possible. So then it goes down to, okay, well, what can I do in my kind of sphere of influence to take care of myself and then to also, you know, take care of my partners, you know? And then the other piece of that is looking at broader identity, right? So we know, and that's something that comes up in retirement too, is that when you overinvest in the job, which my husband did this, everything that happens feels very personal. And so the response that you're going to have is almost akin to being personally attacked, you know, and your body doesn't distinguish between physical threat or emotional, you know, occupational threat.
Yeah. So you can take on those stresses, make it a personal thing when it may actually not be directly personal.
Yeah. And being able to distinguish between, okay, what is, you know, actually happening, what's the reality-based components of this? And then what is the emotional load of all of this? You know, because sometimes with the reality-based components, there may be things that you're able to do to counter some of that negative impact. In some situations, it's, you know, part of the package, and there's not much you can do to directly control that. So then the priority switches over to, okay, how am I going to manage and work through all of these other things that are getting stirred up? Maybe it's a matter of reprioritizing your life and looking at, okay, how much am I investing in this job? Not only when I'm there, but when I'm not there. And, you know, maybe I do care about my family, but I really haven't been doing a ton to invest in them lately. And so sometimes it's a matter of just reprioritizing things so that when you're at work, you're at work. And learning to be at home when you're home.
You know, it's interesting that, I mean, today I was, actually the last couple of days I've been scrolling through YouTube reels. I'm sure what they're called on YouTube, but they're little short videos. And you just, you know, see one after another and after another. And I guess the algorithm is if you watch a couple of them that are similar themes, now you start seeing more and more of those same themes. And it can lead you down a dark, depressing hole. You know,
absolutely.
How much does... perhaps negative things about first responders, about law enforcement, how, you know, in social media, how does that play with an officer's head? You know, if they're sitting in their cruiser and there's not much going on, and they get their phone out and they're starting to scroll, how can that impact someone in law enforcement?
Yeah, a ton. I actually even recommend officers to take a break from social media and family members also, because, you know, it's from day one of the academy. This job, all of the training, all of the experience really conditions and reinforces to look for the worst. Right? And that's a matter of officer safety when we're talking about, you know, working. And so it's very important. The problem is that it also changes the lens that you view self, others, and the world at large. Right. And so when we're, you know, looking on social media and talking about that sphere of influence, right, I may not be able to control this critical incident or this bad thing that just happened, but I can control whether or not I sit and scroll through stuff, you know, and sometimes I'll see this after like officer involved shootings, because that nervous system and everything is just locked into this thing just happened. It almost, you know, I'll talk to so many officers that'll just scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll, almost like they're looking for some sort of like validation or reinforcement for what they're feeling. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And all it does is reinforce the bad and almost keep the brain and body in that, you know, survival mode.
You know, I remember back years ago when 9/11 happened, and and I just remember back then, it was before social media and before we had all these devices that could feed us, you know, all the stuff. I sat in front of my TV for, it seemed like days, just watching those towers come down over and over and over again. And it's kind of exactly what you were saying, kind of looking for that thing to give me some good feeling about this, or just it just soaking it in, and I couldn't find it, you know, and I just kept watching, you know, almost obsessively. And it was, I think all of America was kind of in that place. In a way. And so now it's so much more accessible right here on our devices, you know, and it's really scary and sad how we've become so attached to these things, and how, and I know studies have been done about the mental health crisis in America and how there was a spike as soon as the first smartphone came out, a spike in mental health issues, you know? And so, and I'm sure, you know, that also affects our first responders.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they don't, you know, it's there's so much training on how do you respond to things. You know, and people don't call 911 to say, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm having a good day." Right. It's all this.
Or thank you for your work. Bad. Thank you for your job.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just calling you at their worst moment, whatever that is. And, you know, when that happens, it's like your brain just gets so used to responding to stuff, and you learn to seemingly kind of override or condition your stress response to be able to function during these very intensely stressful situations. And there's not a ton of training on how do you recover. And sure, the, you know, the post-traumatic stress injury, that's a component of it, but even just biologically, how do you teach and train your nervous system to recover from all of that stuff? Because first responders work against their biology every shift. You know, you get an adrenaline dump naturally. We want to kind of coast on down and recover. That takes 18 to 24 hours.
Yeah. And they're off to the next, possible for first. Off to the next call, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So it's like their body and their brain get so used to being stuck on that mode without any of the tools or training on how to do a nice reset or counter the realities of, hey, you know, it takes the human body typically 18 to 24 hours to recover after an adrenaline dump. Okay, well, you don't have that much as a first responder. So how are we going to, you know, how are you going to help your body and your brain out?
Yeah.
So that it gets whatever it can get and squeeze into that short amount of time. Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast today from Ed Milet. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's like a billionaire guy that is kind of a personal development coach as well. And he was talking about how what we eat now affects us 72 hours later. You know, what we consume now affects our bodies later. And so it's important to know, okay, if I'm doing this thing in 3 days and I've got to eat healthy and eat the right things now to prepare myself for that. And I think sometimes if you think about first responders and you know, everything we put in our body affects us one way or another, you know, and I think when first responders are on the job and you know, that they don't eat well often, you know, they're not taking care of themselves. They're not doing those things that really need to not only prepare them for now and for this shift, but for the shifts, you know, 2 days from now.
Exactly. And that's one of the, I mean, that's another example too. There's so many things that first responders can do to kind of maximize what their body and brain naturally is designed to do. And sometimes it's countering those bad habits or gaining some of that education and additional, you know, supportive resources to maybe get that diet back on track.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So all of this kind of leads down a path and through one's career to those, when you start thinking about the future and what's next after the job, right? And we're talking about retirement, and you wrote a book about this. You wrote a book called Surviving Retirement. So why, you know, how, we know it's important to start thinking about that, but oftentimes we don't. What point should someone in law enforcement or first responder start thinking about retirement, and why is that important?
I would honestly say from the second that you get on, you should be thinking about it. The biggest reason there is a lot of the different tools and strategies that you need to put in place to kind of ease that transition are things that you can be doing to counter some of those negative byproducts of the job throughout your career. Additionally, you know, there's situations where you may not be able to complete your job as you wanted to. Maybe there's an injury or an illness, or there's, you know, political or organizational things that are going on that kind of make you feel forced out too. So it's trying to get away from that. Okay, I have to do this many years. Although that's definitely a goal. Also be thinking of, okay, well, what if I get injured or what if I get sick? What if something else happens that pushes me out of this, you know, job? And you want to be prepared as soon as possible. With respect to retirement, you know, I would say day one after you graduate the academy is ideal. At minimum, 5 years prior to retirement. I would say, because that gives you plenty of time to start pulling in some of these tools and countering and teaching your brain and body how to kind of shift modes.
I was talking with actually yesterday's episode. We're in November right now, but yesterday's episode of the podcast, I talked to Mike Ming, who's retired from Cal Fire. And he said something on the show that was really, really key. And I want to kind of, I want to give it to you and see what you say. He said that, you know, firefighting was my job. It was what paid the bills and what, you know, gave me an income and put a roof over my head. But I knew he's, and he got this from someone else. He said, you know, find out what you would like to do after you retire and start working on that. Because if you're not doing it now, it's a good chance you might not do it then. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, part of it, and it's interesting because I think we hear so often, at least more now, right? This job doesn't define you, right? We hear that a lot. It gets a little complicated, right? Sure. And sometimes the culture wants you to be all about this job. The job demands essentially put you in a position where, you know, you may be spending more time at work than at home.
You should be all in.
Exactly. And if you're not, then you're looked at differently by your peers. You know? But I definitely agree, because with retirement, it's a lot of those things and different activities and interests and stuff, they take time. They're habits, right? They're these behaviors that you learn over time and that get reinforced over time. And if the expectation is, hey, you know, you're going to retire from this job that we know is not the healthiest for you, and then magically have all of these wonderful ideas of stuff that you might want to do, you know, chances are, I mean, I completely agree, you're probably not going to, or when you try it and it doesn't succeed or doesn't give you maybe quite the pizzazz that you want it to, you're going to feel, you know, maybe like you failed or disappointed. And then that can diminish any interest that you have in pursuing anything beyond, you know, because you had that disappointing experience.
You know, before we started recording, you mentioned that your husband had gone through the process of retirement. What were some of the biggest challenges you guys faced in that process?
I would say, so he retired after a 29-year career. And I would say for the most part, he'd been in a couple shootings, you know, big incidents where some specialized teams. And pretty much, I mean, he displayed himself as pretty kind of well contained when we talk about emotion, right? He's a typical all in, I'm going to work all the weekends, all the holidays. You know, I don't really show a ton of emotion. So the psychologist part of my brain said, okay, this is going to be a problem. The wife part of my brain was like, please just retire because I'm tired of you being angry. And I think that when he retired, I had expected him to struggle, but not to the extent that he did. And so one of the biggest challenges for us, you know, the initial month or so wasn't bad, to be quite honest. It felt like vacation, right? That stress, that initial stress dissipated. I'm like, oh my gosh, I get my husband back. This is great. You go relax and enjoy yourself. You earned it. Once that started to settle in and he really, really, really felt the impact of that loss of identity, routine, socialization, camaraderie, meaning and purpose, that really hit. So for him, he fell into a deep depression and he started leaning on alcohol, something he did throughout his career, right? And he really started leaning on that and it became, okay, I'm not just having a, you know, drink or two in the backyard or going to Taco Tuesday and having a beer or two. Now I'm drinking every single day. And, you know, and he started to become really reckless and that caused a lot of problems for us. And then additionally, my own routine too, I wasn't even thinking about me or my routine. And realizing, you know, I think as first responder spouses, we get so used to running our own program because they're working, we have to. And then, you know, it goes from that program to now he's home 24/7. So now it's messing up my program. And so we really started butting heads. And that really kind of set me on this pace to learn about retirement. Not something I ever thought about previously, other than I just want my husband to make it to retirement. And that was it. But it really got me looking into, okay, there's more to this. And it's not, yes, there's the mental health component, but there's the relationship component. There's the biological component. I mean, your body gets so used to operating on this roller coaster. You know, Dr. Kevin Gilmartin talks about it in his book, that biological roller coaster of hypervigilance. I mean, that's a real thing. Your body and your nervous system doesn't get the memo right away that you retired. It still thinks it's going to work. You know, so it's kind of still doing these dips. And what that translated to on the home front in retirement is he was having moments of like anxiety or feeling panicked. We actually had a trip to the emergency room because we thought he was having a heart attack. He would get up and just pace and move around a lot. And so it felt like this just very like anxious, almost agitated energy. And he would start just picking small, like verbal arguments because he needed to release that stuff and he no longer had work to do it. And so that caused us to butt heads an immense, immense amount, you know, that first few years. And then I was talking to other retirees and spouses and we weren't unique. This is happening. I'm like, why is nobody talking about this? You know, I think the expectation is you retire and hey, happy retirement, enjoy.
Sail off into the sunset, right?
Yeah. In reality, it's like, hey, we're going to, you know, have however many years in this job that we know is going to mess you up and then have fun in retirement. Like, wait, no, we're not, you're not equipped.
Right.
You know, and so that's really what inspired me to initially develop a class. And then the book came out of the class because other people who were coming in saying, hey, you need to write a book about this stuff. And we kind of pulled together some just real life insights and experiences that my husband and both of us went through during his adjustment, why it happens, and then just some practical tools. I call it like training up for retirement. So you have to train up to meet the demands of the job, your entire career. You got to train up to meet the demands of retirement.
Did you guys seek outside help to kind of guide you through this?
We did not. And it's funny because, you know, I'm a police psychologist, but my husband is very anti-shrink, as he says.
He's married to one.
I went after my shootings. Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because, you know, as a psychologist, I have all of this knowledge and experience. I can help other people, but it's a completely different animal when it's my own husband.
So how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you separate the wife part of you from the psychologist part of you when he's going through his stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too. I wish I could say, hey, here's how to do it. It's tough. Mm. And I think I have to remember, you know, that psychologist piece is there, but I have to let it inform how I support him as a wife. Right. Because if I start, he calls it sounding like a psychologist. Right. So if I start sounding like a psychologist, yeah. he'll shut down.
You gotta back off. Right.
Yeah. So it's a matter of really just, you know, the communication piece is so important. In the communication piece, you know, one thing I had him do as he was coming out of the depression is I had him write down on a notepad, I want you to write down every single thing that you wish you would have known about, that you'd want your partners to know about. And that's how we had structured our class initially and then later the book. You know, and then I talked with a couple hundred retirees and spouses just to kind of get their take. And a lot of it is there were some trends on the folks that eased into retirement a lot better than others. But yeah, it's tricky.
What were some of the success stories of people who successfully navigated that move into retirement? Do you have any anecdotes there?
Yes, I do. So, I have a couple. So I have a few that are pre-retirement that actually sought, counseling, to kind of relearn. I had one retiree tell me that they were learning how to be a human being again and really relearning, not only processing different, let's say, unresolved, you know, traumatic incidents through the career, but really processing emotion very differently. So you're no longer having to contain it to get through the job, but you're having to process it because retirement gets rid of the distraction of work. And oftentimes there's no opportunity to process stuff because you're just going. And so, you know, I have a couple of retirees who pre-retirement sought out counseling just to help them relearn how to be human again. And they eased into retirement. And then some that were after the fact, some coming into class. And we've had through our class, you know, couples that will email me later on saying, thank you so much. We thought we were crazy. And sometimes it's a matter of just knowing, hey, you're not crazy. This is why this stuff happens. Yeah. You know, here's a frame of reference. Your frame of reference is everything's bad. Mm-hmm. Humans are bad. Life is bad. Everything sucks. That's your frame of reference. So when stuff starts happening in retirement, well, what are you going to do? You're going to stick it in that, you know, basket instead of, hey, this is my body naturally responding to years of, you know, being put through the ringer. That's why this is happening. And then you start to regain a better sense of control there. And so those success stories are really kind of, I put those into two categories, the ones that proactively did the work going into retirement. They were better equipped to navigate some of those very natural and normal adjustments. And then the ones after the fact that said, hey, you know, I can't do this alone. I need some help here. And I've seen some do that through former counseling. Some do that just by finding some healthy retired law enforcement officers that they can connect with, that can kind of walk with them through it. So they're not having to do it alone.
Do agencies provide there's some peer support groups who have kind of a retirement chapter or retirement part of their peer support. Is that something that you've seen or is that something that would be helpful?
I think it's definitely helpful. I've seen that. I know with the peer support program I work with, we're just now starting to bring in retirees. I think that's immensely helpful. Programs like COPLINE, which that's fully staffed by retired police officers and that are heavily vetted and trained to do that. You know, I think that that's immensely helpful because you really need people who have walked that walk. You know, I think that's going to have the most impact, you know, coupled with some pre-retirement, just education. Because I think for us, I know with my husband's retirement seminar, it talked about finances, healthcare benefits, you know, estate planning, things like that. I think the mental health portion was essentially don't be an alcoholic. That was it.
That's helpful.
Yeah, drinking's bad. I'm like, really? Because you just spent an entire career doing just that.
Right. Now you have more time.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's finding those ways of, you know, how do you cope with this stuff? And I think, you know, it's the same reason I love working with peer support in the job I have now. You know, I can be up there talking about from my perspective, talking about why these things are important. And that's going to resonate, but it resonates on a different level when you have somebody who's been through that or is actively working through that to say, hey, yeah, no, this is pretty tough. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things my husband does now is he'll actually talk when we do our class, you know, he'll talk about it, his experiences, and then other people that we know that are retiring from the job or getting close to retirement. He'll kind of, you know, hey, we need to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I'll usually take the spouses and say, we need to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's about finding and living out that purpose, mm-hmm. having purpose. I know if you don't have purpose in general, you know, you're wandering aimlessly and it can be really bad, but especially mm-hmm. someone that has had that focus for so many years of this is what mm-hmm. I do. This is my job. This is my purpose. Now, when there's not that, and having something to go to that is mm-hmm. so vital in a healthy life to be able to, I mean, mm-hmm. we know what the average age of retirement is, what, 62 in law enforcement. And that's also the average age of death.
Yeah.
There's a correlation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have purpose, I think you can mitigate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's a matter of too, you know, managing expectations. Mm-hmm. So in talking with retirees, so many are looking for that thing that's almost going to replace what the job mm-hmm. felt like. Now we say, I don't really think that's possible. I don't mean that in a depressing way. I mean that in a very beautiful way, is this job is so unique and there's so many aspects that are irreplaceable. Mm. So it's not so much, let's find a direct replacement for this. It's, hey, let's find different ways of regaining some of that meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it's just one thing that's going to do it for you.
You know, I think we see
many things
in a lot of retirement communities, a lot of, you know, older population, we see more and more people volunteering and doing things, mm-hmm. you know, giving back, serving, mm-hmm. you know, nonprofits, serving the community food bank or whatever it may be. I think if, mm-hmm. if people that are in retirement can start thinking, okay, what do I enjoy? What do I enjoy doing? What can I, what can I do to give back? And then mm-hmm. finding that niche, that thing that, you know, turns that kind of lights their fire. I think that might be mm-hmm. helpful.
Just and oftentimes it is service mm-hmm. to others. You know, when you look at retirees who are doing really well in retirement, there's something in that equation that involves service to others.
Yeah.
In whatever capacity. And it can be tricky too, because, you know, we know that socialization is so important. Connection, mm-hmm. right? We're wired to connect. And it can be a challenge for some first responders because the job wires you essentially to protect. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's, you have years of a job that tells you protect, that exposes you to kind of this ugly, dark side of humanity. And then you're supposed to magically want to connect and trust people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't happen that easily.
Right.
And so, you know, and I think that's when I work with retirees, that's probably where I get the most pushback is, wait, I have to talk to people. Mm-hmm. I have to have a meaningful relationship. What? No, I don't like people. But it's so, so, so important. And I tell them, look, you don't need to be a social butterfly. Mm-hmm. You need one meaningful relationship, mm-hmm. you know, in addition, I would say to a spouse or significant mm-hmm. other, you know, you need one friendship, you know, somebody that you can talk to, like genuinely talk mm-hmm. to and have that meaningful connection. Just one. Mm.
What's been the biggest or the thing that has really helped you guys navigate this as a couple?
Communication. And the communication is sometimes, you know, for us, I think in terms of routine, you know, he would come home from work and there was a period of time where I was excited he's home and I didn't quite understand fully the demands that were placed on him in terms of his bandwidth when he came home. So he'd come through the door and I'm like, oh my gosh, let me tell you all about my day, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I can't listen right now. Like his brain is shutting down. And we found in retirement, we had a complete role reversal because I'm still working. So now I'm coming home. He's excited to see me. And now he's doing the same thing. So one of the communication things that we had to kind of reinstitute was something that got us through, you know, when he was working is we call it our 10-minute rule. So if at any point in time, and it could be either of us, we're just at our capacity to actually just sit and listen, we'll say, hey, I need 10 minutes. And for us, that's, I call that the marriage saver. Because it's our nice way of saying, I can't right now. I just need time to either decompress, whatever. And then when I come back, I'm going to be good to go. So the communication has been immense. And then also, too, I think, you know, in terms of the service to others, you know, really taking on, which we didn't anticipate, you know, taking on this class and the book and the different conversations that that's opened up. I think for me, it feels great. And I know for my husband, I honestly think that's his way of serving others, is getting folks ready, and people who are struggling will reach out to him, you know, and hey, let me help you. Or yeah, this one does suck. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be rough for a little bit. You know, and just finding those connections and ways to give back, I think are immensely helpful.
Wow. Well, this is amazing stuff that you're presenting here, and I really appreciate it. From your perspective, what's been the biggest surprise about retirement?
Mm-hmm. Oof. I would say that we're both adjusting together, because I did not. In any, you know, I always go back and think like, wait, was I thinking about that? I never thought about that. I was solely focused on him. Towards the end of his career, he was very angry and grumpy. So my nightmare was, you're going to have a heart attack or a stroke, either right before or right after you retire. And he's 7 years into retirement now. So he beat that, you know, 5 year post-retirement window. But I would say it was that adjustment didn't affect him in isolation. That affected both of us. And so I think it's important working through retirement, especially if you're in a relationship, family, recognize that you're doing that together. Because I think if either one of us tried to do that alone, it wouldn't work.
What would you guys as a couple, what would you do different, say 5 years out from retirement? What would you do different? Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. I would definitely say start exploring those outside the job things, whatever they are, and figure out, okay, well, what do we want to do? You know, getting some of the routine down, I think. If we had a do-over, I would probably have him take some of that time that gets accumulated, you know, over the course of the career. And let's say that last like year or two before retirement, take off a little bit more work so you can start adjusting to having more time on your hands, not only for him, but for us too. But most definitely, I would say it would be preparing, finding those things to do, really getting his body conditioned. One of the things he's done more of now is get back into the gym. And that helps him. He'll say that helps him maintain his sanity. You know, and like many officers, I think that fell off the last half of his career because he was working so much. You know, but yeah, I would definitely say preparing and finding those outside activities more.
So what's the future for you guys in the retirement journey?
I have no idea. I think, you know, it's an ongoing adjustment. I mean, there's still moments where he'll have feelings of depression that will creep in. And now he knows, you know, okay, when is it just, I mean, I think as humans, we all have our off days, So when is it just a day where I need to kind of stay in and just take care of myself today versus when is this now depression and, you know, one day is turning into two or three or, you know, more. So, I mean, he definitely still has his moments. But now he understands them better. We understand them better. And so I think it's easier for us to navigate that. But the book, you know, just coming out earlier this year has been a lot of fun. We just launched our on-demand version of our class, which is a lot of fun. But I really think for us, it's, you know, kind of continuing what we were working on and then helping other people. Because I don't think retirement is talked about enough. You know, when I was looking at stuff, it was, hey, this is all of, you know, this is why retirement's difficult for cops. The end. Like, all right, well, what do we do about that? You know, and kind of really just, you know, teaching and having those conversations is, hey, you know, the job is going to end at some point. And, you know, what are you, what have you done to invest in life after this job? Because the grass is not greener on the other side, right? It's that saying, it's greener where you water it. So what are you doing?
It's not all golf and fishing trips, right?
Yes. Yeah, that gets boring pretty quickly, especially first responders. They don't know how to relax.
Are there days when maybe there's something going on in the community? Maybe it's on the news. Maybe it's on, you know, the smartphone feed that he's like, oh, I wish I could be there.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. And even during the height of, you know, with COVID and all that civil unrest, that lit a fire in him so immensely where he wanted to be back at work and he wanted to be helping and to feel useful and recognizing he couldn't do that. You know, that stuff does pop up. I think one of the great things with the job I have is he understands it from his perspective. So when there are those days that are especially heavy or difficult, you know, he now those roles are reversed. So now he's there, you know, for me. And I think that's helps him a lot, you know, and then just continuing to be there for our friends and people that we know, they, those random emails that I'll get, hey, I have a question for you, you know, I think definitely that helps them a lot.
So how has all this knowledge that you guys have gained over the past 7 years, how is that, how does that speak to you and your retirement plans?
Oh, for me, I definitely am. We're going to need to find some things to do. That's what we always say. If we take a vacation, like, man, we really need to find some stuff to do. So we're trying to do that more, taking trips, things that we like to do, even if it's just local stuff. Instead of, I think we lived as like, you know, little hermits for so long. Right. And so now it's about really just connecting, reconnecting, you know, with people that we haven't seen for a while, going on small trips, getting outdoors is a big one. But for me, it definitely is highlighted. Not only do I need to take care of myself throughout my career, but even into retirement, our gears are spinning, you know, looking at retirement property and where we want to live and not only stop there, but okay, what can we do once we get there? You know,
And all this is kind of rolling through my head because my wife is about 6.5 years from retiring. She's a school administrator and, you know, super stressful right now and just, just counting down the years of when she can step out of that role. And so we're talking about, okay, what do we do? What's our plans? You know, I'm self-employed. I can kind of work from anywhere and I don't know if I'll ever retire officially, but you know, I want to always keep on doing something like this or, you know, at least with podcasting, I can kind of do it from anywhere. I don't have to like schlep gear all over the place to, you know, which is, you know, becoming harder, but, so we're trying to figure out what that looks like as for us as a couple. And one thing we have decided to do is we love to travel. We love adventures and we're even dabbling with maybe starting a YouTube channel. I don't know. You know, the older retired couple doing the YouTube thing, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But we love last year for our anniversary. And I want to highly recommend this. We went to Lisbon, Portugal for our anniversary. Oh, absolutely loved it. So much really? So that we're like, when she retires, we're going to move there for like 6 months and just live there for 6 months because we have grandkids. So we don't want to stay there permanently, you know? And just go explore Europe and just do that and get that out of our system. And then we'll come back and figure out something after that. But if you're looking for a place to go, Portugal is amazing.
So. Yeah. I just got to get my husband on an airplane. That's the next challenge.
Well, there is that, right?
Small detail. Right?
I guess you could take a boat. It might take a while, but
yeah. We'll need to be heavily sedated.
Let's see, was that, what was his name on the A-team? He wouldn't fly anywhere. Mr. T. Mr. T.
Yes. Yes, that's him. Exactly. Yeah. Just needs a huge sedative. He'll be fine.
Very good. Well, let me ask you this, a couple more questions. So what do you do now as you're in the middle of, you're a psychologist, you work with law enforcement, you hear involved with heavy stuff. What do you do to take care of you?
I'm somebody, I've always been somebody who needs individual time to recharge. And typically it looks probably outwardly like I'm not really doing much, but internally just processing through stuff. I'm a huge proponent of writing stuff down. And I've done that for years. This job has taught me the value of continuing to do that. And one thing I started to do instead of just kind of journaling the process the day is just writing down different perspectives gained from situations. So what did I learn? What do I understand better? And what do I maybe appreciate? You know, something that I didn't really, not that I didn't appreciate it, but didn't really think about it. Kind of those things that we take for granted. And so constantly maintaining that perspective for me is helpful. I enjoy spending time outdoors. And then sometimes, you know, my husband, if I respond to a major incident or it's just been a series of incidents, you know, I always say like I'm a sponge. Right. So I'm there and I'm absorbing some of that people pain. And then I come home and then my husband hugs me. We call it like he squeezes out the sponge. And so sometimes it's just, hey, I need a good cry. And just to let my nervous system and everything reset. You know, but yeah, I absolutely need to take care of myself so I can continue to take care of everybody else.
So final question. What's something fun you guys are going to do in the next month?
Oh man, something fun in the next month. Can I do the next couple of months? Because we are going to Hawaii.
Awesome.
So yes, we just came back from a mini vacation. He is for Hawaii. Okay. That's his one trip. I'm trying to get him to Europe because I want to do like Ireland, Scotland. Yeah, that's a work in progress. We're still working on that.
So Hawaii, that'll be a fun trip. So
Yeah, we went there 7 years ago for our 10-year anniversary. And then we meant to go back a couple years later, but between COVID, volcanoes erupting, and everything else, we're finally getting back. Awesome. 7 years later. So
awesome. Well, Medina, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. Really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and to learn about retirement, and maybe I can use some of that in my own plans for the future. So I appreciate it. And where can people find your book, and how can they get in touch with you?
So the book, it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's called Surviving Retirement, Finding Purpose and Fulfillment Beyond the Badge. And then also my website, www.drbaumgart.com, has information about the book, my trainings, one of which is a Surviving Retirement class that's now on demand. Okay.
And I'll be sure to link all those in the show notes for the podcast and let people know where they can get to it. So thank you again for being on the program. I really appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Baumgart, for the work you're doing with first responders. And thank you for listening and watching the show. I really appreciate it. And hey, please leave a review and give it 5 stars if you think it's worth it, and subscribe to the show. And be sure to share it with your network if you think it's valuable information. Also, just a reminder that you can see the video of this content on our YouTube channel. I'll leave a link in the show notes where you can access that. And remember, you are not alone.
And if you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, you can dial 988 for help. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.